now. Fueled by facts and driven by truth, live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio. And now here are your hosts, Carrie Simpson and Terry O'Neill.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everyone. It's Terry and Carrie, the Terry and Carrie Show, a.k.a. RKR.
I want to go, oh, Terry.
Is that a song?
We should turn this into
a musical?
I was like, Terry-o. It just sounds, you know, like, oh,
right.
Terry, Terry-o.
Like, or on Terry.
Terry.
There was a song during the Canadian Confederation that became quite famous in 1967. It was Ontario. They came up with their own song.
So if you ever move to Ontario, you've got a song.
Some of our listeners might remember Terry Terrio. Got a big show tonight. Before we get into that, we can talk about our week. And Carrie, it seems that every week for the last two or three weeks, we've been talking about animal rights and the kind of the lunacy that's involved in the growing animal welfare.
Wait a minute, Terry. Kind of. You're downplaying this.
Yeah.
Well, did you take a chill pill before you came to the show tonight?
Well, I'm going to have to tell you that I'm still in shock because I was sexually assaulted by a dog today. I was minding my own business. Walking along the path.
And he was minding your business.
On Lafarge Lake in Coquitlam. And this big, I don't know what breed it was, lunged at me and stuck its schnauzer into my midsection private parts. And very quickly was yanked away by its owners on the leash.
But not... Okay. Not soon enough. The damage was done. The trauma had happened.
That was a sexual assault. If it was a human doing that, lunging and putting its face in my midsection, my private parts, definitely a human sexual assault. Now, our guest is standing by, and we're just going. I have to finish this story right now, and that is that the person standing behind, like walking their dog about 15 feet behind this person, said, "Don't worry, he's just a big friendly monster." And I immediately thought,
wait, Terry, this has a whole bunch of potential.
That's
just want our audience to know I'm being really good here.
Okay, all right. We're going to talk more about this later in the show.
Oh, you're going to leave it at the monster?
But my immediate response was, if this were a person, A, it was a sexual assault, and B, big friendly monster, no, criminally insane. So you talk about dog rights, animal rights, but where's the animal responsibility? That's what I want to know.
Well, that's
no
going to all happen when they get personhood.
So this is a continuing theme. And yes, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about this towards the end of the show. But meantime, we better get on to talk about what's on the show tonight, Carrie. Big show. We'll be ending the show with a discussion with Vivian Krause about her latest amazing column in the National Post and about the BC First Party's involvement in laying a complaint against outside interference in the BC Liberal election campaign for their leadership, all because of what Vivian has done. In the middle of the show, we'll be talking with John Henry Weston, co-founder and editor-in-chief of LifeSite News, about the peril that is facing that very important website. And that should be a very good discussion and an opportunity for Roadkill listeners to weigh in and to also to support LifeSite News.
Yes.
But first, we are going to talk with the eminently famous broadcaster and author, Lowell Green. People in Eastern Canada probably know Lowell very well. Our listeners and viewers in Western Canada, maybe not as much. But he's award-winning. He's a good, solid, common-sense commentator. Stirs it up now and again and is definitely stirring it up.
Now and again? More than that, Terry.
Okay, we hope so anyway.
Well, you are just on an even keel tonight.
Well,
aren't you?
Don't want to oversell these things.
we'll let
Lowell Green talk about his new blockbuster book. We hope it's a blockbuster for his sake, entitled Mayday, Mayday. It's about subtitle Curb Immigration, Stop Multiculturalism, or it's the end of Canada. Of the Canada we know. Welcome live now from points east of our Vancouver studios, Lowell Green. Hello, Mr. Green.
Yes. I have to tell you something. My father always told me never, never to follow any you know, discussion about animals. And here, I turn out you guys are talking about dogs.
Yes.
Obviously a liberal dog, no question.
That's
about
right.
That.
Well, I wasn't going to talk about that, but we thought we weren't going to be able to get in touch with you right off the top of the show. Our producer was having a...
Well, I'm glad that you did. I actually done a little bit of research, and I think what you folks are doing there is really quite astonishing. Oh. And I'd like to bring you down to Ottawa so you can show me how to do the same thing.
Well,
I think you're probably...
We'll just
probably
apply for a government grant to fly us there. Got no problem remaining.
No government grant. Actually, I'm going to be honest with you. That's one of the things that I am really proud of. I have a runaway bestseller here. In fact, Mayday, Mayday is one of the best-selling books of the year in Canada. And I've done it all, as I've with all of my books, this is the sixth one, not a cent of government money, no government grants from any level of government, and I'm really proud of that, because if you open the flyleaf of a lot of books today and published in this country, you're going to see there's grants from the BC this, from the Ontario that, from the federal government, from the Arts Council. I don't know why. You know, it seems to me that if an author writes a book that's good enough for people to read, they'll buy it, and the author can make a living at it, or at least he can make some money. I don't understand why the government's got to subsidize book publishers.
Wait, novel concept, Lowell. Man, you're un-Canadian. I don't know, Terry. Do we need to censor this kind
of talk? I'm
going
to send an email to Heritage Canada right now and report Lowell Green and tell your station manager, CFRA.
I'm going to tell you something. I think that as a consequence, I think we have a lot of garbage that passes for literature in this country. I mean, a lot of the stuff... nobody really wants to read it. And by the way, this includes some of the so-called leading authors, almost all of whom, of course, work for the CBC or have worked for the CBC and live in Toronto and drink martinis all together. So,
you know who you're talking about right now? It's Marcy McDonald. Marcy McDonald, the Armageddon factor. Are you familiar
with Margaret Atwood? That the left,
yes,
liberal CBC crowd, that crowd there.
That's right. Anyway, listen, Lowell, we should get to your book, and the reason that Carrie and I both wanted to talk about your book, Mayday, Mayday, even though we haven't seen it, we saw the wonderful ad that appeared.
Well, are you guys too cheap to buy the?
Yeah, we are.
Thing?
We are. You know, no government subsidy to do this sort of thing, but you know, we can intuit that this is a good book. Important book. At a time in Europe when the Chancellor of Germany, the President of France, the Prime Minister of England are all saying week after week, they're falling in line saying multiculturalism has failed. At a time in Canada when we're talking about 280,000 legitimate immigrants coming to this country, and as you point out, refugees on top of that, family reunifications on top of that, all sorts of stuff where we may be talking about up close to 500,000 new Canadians coming
in
here.
Well, actually, I think Canadians are being badly misled. I don't think very many Canadians understand the gravity of the situation. I don't think they understand the tidal wave of people who pour into this country. It's actually now almost 800,000 newcomers every year, most of whom stay here and require all of the services, health care, present security problems. Let me just go through it. Now they've just told us that 280,000, you do the mathematics there, I'm terrible at it, but 280,000 legitimate immigrants,
right,
about 40 to 45,000 refugees. We've got about 100, actually last year there was over 100,000 foreign students, which I think is one of the biggest boondoggles of all. And believe it or not, last year 257,000 foreign workers. You're talking almost 800,000 people coming into Canada, many of them from countries and cultures that hate this country, that don't understand democracy, many of the people that we're bringing in now at all of these levels, including the foreign students, by the way, come from cultures that hate us. They don't understand democracy. They don't understand the way we do things. They don't understand and don't care to understand Canadian values. 800,000. How the hell can we screen 800,000? We can't. There's no way. And in fact, I say this in my book and I quote a number of experts at this that say that it's impossible to properly screen all of these people.
Let's take these things one at a time because we've got, first off, the issue of, I think your numbers total at 700,000, by the way, not 800,000. I'm glad you produced the caveat before you recited that by saying you weren't good at math.
He's so picky.
Oh, wait a minute. I'll do it right here.
That's right. Okay. Listen. So we've got just the influx, regardless of
of what they believe or what they don't believe, what they stand for, what they don't stand for. You've got a huge influx of people, whether it's 280,000 or 700,000,
yep,
coming, entering the country every year. A lot of those people are going to put a strain on the Social Security system.
Well, let me give you an example. All right, I quote, by the way, studies done at Fraser Institute and at the University of British Columbia.
Good West Coast institution.
Now, about every single year for the past 10, about 80,000. Here's one of the problems with immigration. They almost all, over 70% of them now pour into only two cities, Toronto and Vancouver. Every single year, about 80,000 legitimate immigrants arrive in Vancouver and stay there. Now, if only 10% of them buy cars, you're looking at an additional 8,000 cars every year on Vancouver roads. In Toronto, it's about 120 to 125,000 new people.
Now, I don't want you to start sounding like an environmental protester here who's going to complain about a little congestion and a little bit of extra air pollution. You're not one of those tree huggers, are you, Lowell?
Well, no, not at all.
Okay.
No. But what I'm saying to you is, how does this improve the lives of anybody? I mean, how does this improve the lives of people in BC to crowd the highways even more? How about all of the extra costs that's involved here? How about the security risk? How about the health? In Toronto, it's estimated that 25% of all hospital beds are now occupied by immigrants who have been in the country less than 2 years.
Yeah.
25%. I was unable to get comparable figures in Vancouver, but you can do the math. I mean, if there's 120 coming into Toronto, 80 into Vancouver,
yeah,
but you can figure it out yourself.
You're making my favorite point, and that is the industry that's associated. You know, I always say the industry that is generated by mother government's failure to be a good parent,
yes,
you know, is sucking us taxpayers. We are called cash cows here on Roadkill Radio, right? And,
yeah,
you know, there's just no more milk left of the kitty. You know, this is what...
To mix a metaphor.
Well, you know what's
well,
in my mind?
As a matter of fact...
Last time I tried to milk a kitty, it came up pretty dry.
Once again, we're talking the study. Now, my book, what I've done is I have just taken facts that are out there from Statistics Canada, various studies that have been done in the United States and Canada and so forth, and put it all together. And one of the things that a lot of people don't understand is, and this, by the way, is Professor Grubel at the UBC, who says that since the year 2000, each new immigrant to Canada cost us net loss about $6,000 a year. You do the mathematics on that one. As a matter of fact, the federal government, get this, federal government, and this is all in stats, I'm not making this up, this is Stats Canada, federal government of Canada spends more money on immigrant services than it does on health care. How do you like that?
Wow.
How come nobody's reporting on this other than Roadkill Radio and you?
Well, no, actually, I've been on talk shows right across the country. But you know, you were talking, I think, Carrie, just a moment ago about the industry that's built up.
Right.
I was on the Bill Good show just last week, and they had me up against some guy, and this guy is mad as hell at me and so forth. This guy is an immigrant lawyer. He's an immigration lawyer. This guy's making a huge sum of money, you know, bringing more people in here. But he's lying, and they're lying to them. Let me give you something else. It's not working. Immigration is not working for Canada, but it's not working for the immigrants. Do you realize that in Vancouver, the unemployment rate for new immigrants coming into Vancouver is now almost 40%? That's for immigrants coming from Asia and coming in from Africa. Unemployment rate about 40%. Figure that one out. And
wow,
the same thing in Toronto, actually. It's even worse. The unemployment rate, and this is once again Stats Canada, unemployment rate for recent immigrants from Africa in Toronto is now 48%. Almost half the people coming in from Africa are unemployed. And in Ottawa, let me give you another one. In Ottawa, we have a very large Somali community. And these are figures that come right from the Somali community itself. Over 60% of Somalis who have lived in Ottawa for 20 years or more are still on welfare after 20 years.
Wow.
Okay, I was right.
I mean, we're starting off with just an economic question. And by the way, we're starting to get emails and people lining up to want to make phone calls. I've asked them to hold off for a bit. But we just got an email from Jane who wants to know exactly what it costs to bring each and every person into Canada from elsewhere. Well, it depends how you measure it, I guess. But
well, no, the figure's there. My book, Mayday, Mayday, the figure is there, and this is from UBC, and are published by the Fraser Institute, the net loss is about $6,000 a year per immigrant since the year 2000.
And Jane makes a year per immigrant. Okay, well that follows up with Jane then, because she makes the point. Couldn't that money be used to give bonuses to already established Canadian families to have more kids?
Right. You know what?
I guess it could.
That's one of the things I deal with, because people say, well, you know, we need the immigrants because of the falling fertility rate and the aging population. That's largely mythology. But France is a good example, and I'm glad that Jane has sent that email. In France, about 10, 12 years ago, the fertility rate was down about 1.4. You need about 2.1 just to, you know, reproduce yourself. So they decided they're going to have mass immigration. Well, we know what happened there. It just blew up in their face. So essentially, France has stopped immigration, and they're spending all the money that otherwise they'd spend on new immigrants on French families. The tax rate for families in France is about half of what we would pay here for a family of three or four, and there are many other benefits. But one of the real things that they're doing, and Kerry, you'll be interested in this, one of the things that's really working in France is they're doing a lot of television and radio advertising to make having larger families cool, fashionable again. Because the feminist movement, you know, a number of years ago tried to convince women that having children was a terrible thing. You were slaved, you were chained, you know, all of that stuff. But in France, and it's working. So their fertility rate in France has increased from 1.4 to almost 2 because they're making it much more financially available for them to have larger families. And they're promoting having larger families as a really neat thing to do. And it's working.
Well, very, very, very good. I'm glad.
Spending it on French families. What a concept. They spend it on French families.
This is a perfect time. This week I found out I've got number 7 grandchild on the way.
Congratulations, Kerry. Now, I don't know, Lowell, if you're on the Internet and watching us or live streaming, but you look at Kerry Simpson and to think that she's got another grandchild
7
on the way.
7 grandkids. 6
My
grandkids,
goodness gracious.
One on the
well,
way. Yeah.
There you go.
I've never talked to a 30-year-old grandmother.
That's right. That's right. So Lowell, and by the way, I will invite callers to call in now to 604-525-4167. I know that some people are anxious to talk to us. But while we're waiting for the calls to come in, we're sort of...
There's one other thing. Sorry, I know we don't have much time. Here is what's happened. A lot of people don't understand that immigration changed totally in 1990. And this was, by the way, thanks to Brian Mulroney, a conservative prime minister.
Progressive conservative.
Pardon?
Progressive conservative.
Yeah. but from Quebec, and I'm going to tie that in. But up until 1990, for every non-European who came to Canada, about 4 Europeans came. I mean, Canada was founded almost exclusively by European, with a Judeo-Christian ethic and heritage. All right? I mean, that's a fact. A lot of people don't like me to say it, but that's a fact. It was founded primarily by Europeans. Yes, there were a lot of Chinese come in and have made wonderful immigrants, but we always made sure that the European Judeo-Christian nature and heritage remained intact. But in 1990, it's totally reversed. Today, get this, and this is a fact, Stats Canada, I'm not making this up, for every European, who, including from the United States, who immigrates to Canada, 5 are now coming in from non-European, non-Christian countries.
Well,
if we keep it up, what we are creating in Canada, I'm sorry, is a nation that will no longer be European in nature because we're not producing enough babies and we're not, you know, we're just being overwhelmed. We are producing a country that essentially will be Middle Eastern, African, and Asian.
Well, you raise a ton of questions here. And one of them has to do with the nature of multiculturalism. Now, in Canada, can anyone say in Canada that Canadian multiculturalism has failed in the same way it did in France, Germany, and England? Nobody, no leading politician is saying that. Are you saying that the way that we've approached it has failed as well? Or will fail catastrophically if the European part of it doesn't remain preeminent? Multiculturalism work with other ethnicities and other national groups coming to the fore? I mean,
how can you have already we have the problem with Quebec, so we really have two Canadas now. But how can you have a country with no central culture, with no sense of unity or cohesion?
It's more than that, Lowell. No sense of identity.
Precisely.
I mean,
not only a lot of the immigrants. You see, another thing that's changed is a lot of the. I'm sorry to say this, but a lot of the people who come to Canada today have no intentions of trying to build this country or even to make a permanent home here. They are coming here. They, in many cases, are sending money, including a lot of welfare, out of the country, back to their home country, and they plan in a number of years to go back. We have, for example, you're on the West Coast now. There are over 100,000 people now living in Hong Kong and Macau with Canadian citizenships. Mm-hmm. They came to Canada. This was prior to the Chinese taking over, you know, in Hong Kong. And they got Canadian citizenship, but now they're back, but they still have Canadian citizenship.
Are we moving in though into? I mean, are we looking at? I'm being a devil's advocate here because we have to consider all these sides. Are we not? However, moving into an era where the idea of the old fashioned nation state is no longer. Sort of as valid as it used to be, where because of international trade, the internet, the fluidity of peoples,
globalization.
But you see, can I respond to that?
You certainly can. I just want to get that on the table.
Actually, in this age of globalization, what you are seeing is that people are realizing that they need more what I call tribalism. And what we are seeing, Sudan's a good example. They're divided, and we have seen now Eastern Europe, breaking away from the Soviet Union. People realize that they have a long culture. They have a culture that's lasted. They have a heritage, and in many cases they are returning to it. And France is a good example, and so is Britain. I mean, when David Cameron says multiculturalism is not working, what he's really saying is, hey, we want to get back to being more British here. When Sarkozy says, hey, multiculturalism is not working, what he's saying is we want to get back to being more French here. Ditto the same thing in Germany. Let me give you one other example just to show you how we're so confused in this country. A man named I don't have my book in front of me. Cheng Chung, he's head of success, of the Chinese business organization in Vancouver.
Right.
Front page of the Toronto Globe and Mail last March quoted him as saying that Vancouver has become the first Asian city outside Asia. And I'm saying this is supposed to be a good thing. Excuse me, Asian cities are wonderful, but this is Canada. Let me say this. What do you think? And you people, I think, understand what I'm saying here. What do you think the Globe and Mail would have said if an American had said, Vancouver will become the first American city outside the United States? It would have been howls of protest.
Yeah.
But they say, am I right or wrong?
Oh, you're absolutely right. But you have to know that here on Roadkill Radio, that we really don't get that worked up about the downstream media anymore. We call them the downstream media.
I still work in it.
Yeah, I guess you do. So
because
we are so used to these sorts of hypocritical double standards that
can you imagine them waking up in Paris one morning and the Paris newspapers blast Paris to become the first Mexican city outside Mexico.
Yeah.
Can you imagine them waking up in New York City and saying, New York City to become the first French city outside France? They just would not allow it. But here in Canada, oh yeah, Vancouver, second largest city in English Canada. Oh yeah, an Asian city. Oh, that's good, yeah. What the hell's wrong with a Canadian city?
I want to ask you something because when Terry raised the invitation that he was extending to you to be on the show, I thought, you know, this is interesting because suddenly it's become okay to talk about this subject. You know, five years ago, you would have been called a racist, a bigot.
Well, I still am.
But now that, you know, a few of these biggies in other countries are coming out and singing your song, it's
more acceptable.
It's becoming a little bit more, and dare I say, trendy or vogue.
He's a sage.
Well, let me tell you that Toronto is, Toronto, as you know, Stats Canada says that in the next 18 years, Caucasians will be a minority in Toronto. I think they're already a minority there. And this has got nothing to do with color. We've always been multiracial. It's got to do with the culture, you know. Mm-hmm. Like just having a Canadian culture. But listen to this. The media, except for John Oakley, one radio station, won't touch me with a 10-foot pole. I have friends at CFRB. I used to work for CFRB, the big talk station. I talked with one of the hosts there. He said, Lowell, if I were to have you on the air, he said it would cost this station hundreds of thousands of dollars.
You would probably give a heart attack to half the staff members of the Toronto Star as well if they...
No doubt about that.
Yeah.
But think of this now.
Do we hope?
where you can't talk about something as important as your culture and you know... And because advertisers will cancel.
Yeah, I remember
that's
that.
That's pretty serious.
Yeah, it's serious. I remember when I was editor of BC Report magazine through the 1990s, when Vancouver, the huge immigration from China was happening, specifically Hong Kong, and I remember one of our writers at the time, Robin Brunet, I asked him to do a story on the history of immigration in Canada, and one of the points he made, and he made it was quite a good point, was that he, looking back, in no election in the last half century was the immigration policy ever an issue. It was developed outside of the election process.
Nor was multiculturalism.
Multiculturalism. All of this stuff happened through Parliament. Yes, some of it through Parliament.
Not even Parliament. Let me just tell you.
Okay, go ahead.
I was on the air at the time in Ottawa at CFRA. Pierre Trudeau is the Prime Minister. We had the B&B Commission. You must remember that.
Yes, bed and breakfast. That's right. Good stuff.
Okay. But that was bilingual, bicultural. Okay? So we went to bed one night thinking that we were a bilingual, bicultural country. The next morning we woke up and Trudeau said, well, actually, no, we're a multicultural. But I want to point something out.
Hey, I just meant, Law, this is part of the complexity of what makes Canada so great. You know, we can at the same time
but
be bilingual and bicultural and multicultural. It is part of the paradox of the great northern people who we are.
Yeah, but just a minute.
Sorry, I wasn't being serious.
No, not in Quebec.
Oh, no,
Quebec
true.
Is not multicultural.
That's
you ask
true.
Anybody,
very true.
You are a Quebecois. And all three, it was Trudeau who gave us multiculturalism. It was our friend Mulroney who opened the doors to mass tidal wave of immigration. And it was Jean Chrétien who perpetuated that. So we've got, listen to this, three Quebec prime ministers who make damn sure that Quebec's language and culture is strengthened and becomes more unified, more homogeneous. While English, essentially what Trudeau said is, well, you in English Canada, you don't have a culture, so we're going to give you a whole basket full of cultures, some of which, let's be honest, some of these cultures are god-awful. They stone women.
Well, because I see time is just rip-roaring around here, and we're going to have you back. Well, what are the solutions? If we look at all these facts
the
and figures. Sorry?
Read the book. There are a number of things, and these aren't my solutions. These are things that are working. I've mentioned one, is that we stop spending all of this money on immigrants, and we spend it on Canadian families. We make it more fashionable. We make it more financially viable for Canadians to have more babies. That's one way. Another thing is that, and this is already beginning to happen, we extend the retirement age past 65. This is already beginning. And there are a number of other things. We've got to improve productivity here. But I'm going to tell you this. The answer is not mass immigration. The answer is not to bring in 700,000 or whatever it is people into this country every year, all of whom, by the way, including temporary workers, are entitled to all the benefits.
Yeah, that's a huge
the
problem.
The answer, listen, by the way, I know that we have to go, and
that's
I want to
fine.
Thank
no,
you very
we
much.
Can stretch it for a few minutes, no problem.
Sure, okay. I just want to get the plug in here.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get your plug.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Before we get to the plug,
okay. We were talking about the multicultural nature of Toronto. There was a very astute letter to the editor in one of the papers today in response to the Vancouver mayor saying diversity is the city's ticket to future prosperity. And this letter writer said, if 60% of Vancouver residents are visible minorities by 2031, as what the mayor said, then the remaining 40% will also be a minority. Assuming they are not invisible, they must therefore also be a visible minority. This means that 100% of Vancouver's residents will be visible minorities, at which point there will be no minorities at all, just people.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't that be
nice?
You know,
let me just comment on that.
Yeah.
Okay, that's very important.
Yeah.
You know, they say that, Vancouver is the first Asian city, and then they talk about multiculturalism. Well, I'm going to tell you something. Asian cities are not multicultural. I'm going to tell you right now, you go to China, it's not multicultural. You go to Japan, it's not multicultural. Neither is India multicultural. So when they say, oh, Vancouver is the first Asian city, I'm sorry, it's an Asian city. Sure as hell is not multicultural.
Oh, Lowell, I don't know if you just heard that sound effect, but that comes out of the ether once every week during our show. And that's to signify that the person speaking at the moment that sound effect appears is Roadkill Radio's Warrior of the Week.
Woohoo!
And that is you. So congratulations, Lowell Green, on being Roadkill Radio's Warrior of the Week. You're going to enter our Hall of Fame. So thank you very much, Lowell.
What do I got to run over, skunk or something?
No, you're doing fine. You're running over all the nonsense, and that's why you get the Warrior of the Week award.
So well, roadkill can mean many things. It can mean the people who get knocked over but refuse to keep lying down and stand back up. Or it can mean the people who, I think this is where you fit in, who make other people roadkill.
The second one gets my vote, Terry O'Neill. Right.
I would say you're very kind, but I'm not sure if you are.
Yeah. Oh, it's a coveted award.
Oh,
yeah. Well, yeah.
Oh, this is coveted. Okay.
Yes.
Oh,
absolutely. You want this. This is,
yes,
this
that's
is
right.
Big.
You
have arrived now, Lowell Green. Let me tell you.
There have been guests on the show, repeat guests, who have never retained this high status and keep wanting to come back in order to get it. So
I think I'm thrilled.
We'll give them. So the commercial for Mayday, Mayday is that you can order the book through the website www.maydaymayday.ca.
Yeah, and actually, if anybody, you know, if people have queries or anything that they can, I will answer them. A lot of people, you know, they're taking me to task or they're querying a little bit further. Maydaymayday.ca. Yeah, I'd be
glad
to do it.
They're
going to be out on e-books. It may be on e-book now at $9.95. I'm not sure, but it's certainly within the next couple of days.
This is,
you were right off the top. This is a very, very important issue in this
country.
We have to decide if we want to retain the kind of heritage that our forefathers, our forebears gave us, because, you know, that the heritage, we are changing the heritage.
Well, and that's why people want to come to this country, and this is the this cultural cohesiveness that's non-existent because we don't even know what we want as a nation, or we've lost it, or somebody, more importantly, has given it away. This is where, you know, Canadians are coming together and saying, what makes us Canadian?
Okay,
and it's not beer.
Before you respond, Lowell, there's something, the Conservative government of Stephen Harper and especially Jason Kenney has been tasked to tap into the various multicultural communities, or one multicultural community, many different ethnic communities, national communities in Canada, because I think astutely the Conservative government has said that a lot of these folks are naturally small-c conservatives. They have strong family values, and they've been kind of usurped or taken over, hijacked by the Liberal Party, because the Liberal Party was the party of immigration. Is there some sense, some good sense in what the Conservatives are doing here, or is it misguided?
Let me say that Jason Kenney is a friend of mine, and I might add so is the Prime Minister. I have great respect for him, and I think he has for me. There's no question in my mind, and I'm not quoting them here, but there's no question in my mind that they understand the problem. Jason has read my book and has commented on it. He's been on the air about it, and understands the problem. But until the people of Canada understand really what's going on here, there's not much they can do, because to suggest, for example, that we curb immigration or stop multiculturalism would be political suicide. So it's got to, the movement has got to, the impetus must come from the people. They must understand what's happening, and they must not be afraid to speak up.
Good on that point, Lowell. I think we will say good night, and I know you're from a far east time zone. It's getting a little late there. We're just getting going here, though. But
actually, do you know where I'm talking to you from? I'm talking to you in the Bahamas.
Yes. From an island nation in the Caribbean.
You had to mention.
Island of sanity here.
You just had to mention that, didn't it?
Yes, we did know that. Lowell Green, author, broadcaster, honored Canadian, and we were honored tonight to have you on
our
show.
And a Roadkill Radio Warrior of the Week.
Thank you, Lowell Green.
Thank you very
much. Good luck with it.
I'll be glad to come on any time with you.
Excellent.
We will
have you
back.
Great guest.
Good night. Bye-bye now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And we were going to be getting a phone call from at least one person who said I asked him to wait 10 minutes and 20 minutes went by and he didn't call. But anyway, I'm sorry. I hope I didn't scare you away.
Thank you. We did get another email from Ron, who noted that Doug Collins was trying to make some of the same points that Lowell was making, but he was vilified by the mainstream media and called a racist. They lied. I knew Doug. He didn't have a racist bone in his body. He was concerned about Canada's culture, says our correspondent and good friend Ron Gray. I got into some trouble a couple of years ago, and I wrote a big op-ed piece about Doug Collins, and I used some strong language in there because I found some of what Doug Collins wrote objectionable, and I think he was kind of playing cutesy. But I had a lot of respect for him as a free speech advocate, a lot of respect for him for a guy standing up for what he believed in, and I respected the many publications that gave him a forum for many of those years. I didn't always think that when I first started my career. I didn't think that at all, but my eyes were open, and I did end up respecting him greatly. The piece that I published in the National Post upset some people, but I made an important point that he was the first victim of the Human Rights Tribunal here, and there was Section 7 of the BC Human Rights Act was specifically targeted at him in order to gag him. So in that sense, I was a supporter of Doug. I didn't always agree with the way he presented things. And anyway, this comment from Ron Gray gave me a chance to go on air about that.
Well, and you know, we are going to look more at this whole subject matter of the industry associated with immigration, refugee, and multiculturalism, Terry. I think Canada's at a place, and maybe, you know, our financial state of affairs is probably what's going to cause common sense to start at least having a forum on some of these discussions, because these discussions are going to have to happen now. And, you know, the more I read about Lowell Green, the more I was impressed, because it takes a brave man to say the things that he's saying in this culture.
Yeah, and this is a self-published book, and one of the points we didn't get to is that if you read the list of Canadian bestsellers in the newspapers every week, this book doesn't appear, but I have no doubt that this book is selling very well, because he's a prominent journalist back east. And is this a caller we have on the line, Len, or is that our next guest? Is that a caller? Okay, the caller. Hello. Are you there?
Yes, Terry. This is Mike Schutten calling.
Hi, Mike.
I heard you refer to a caller who was hoping to get on,
yeah,
and that was myself.
Oh, sorry about that.
I think the line was busy. There was some confusion there.
I don't know what happened. I'm sorry about that. Well,
anyway,
Lowell has had to sign off, but did you want to make a point or ask a question of Carrie or me?
I want to encourage both of you as well to have a guy like Mr. Green on is a great thing for Canada. It gets the discussion going about multiculturalism and the problems with our immigration system. As Lowell Green alluded to, people like Stephen Harper and Jason Kenney aren't able to discuss these issues because of the perception that it would be political suicide. And I think it's unfortunate, because we see leaders in Europe speaking about these very things.
But it's not political suicide
for them.
Yeah, but Mike, you know, you raise an interesting word, leaders. You know, there has to be leadership on some of these fronts, and I think this is what is missing so obviously in this country, is the lack of leadership. Everybody's kowtowing to, you know, what they think they can say and what they can't say. And, you know, I think this political arrogance of Trudeau maybe, you know, should have been a little bit of an example for some of the so-called leaders, you know, of recent years. You know, mm-hmm. I think that it's time that some of them stood up and at least said,
not
you
necessarily
know,
to emulate
they
Trudeau,
don't have
but
to fly the bird.
The
you know, they don't have to. They don't have to fly the bird.
Okay.
But you know, we are leadership deficient. You know, sure, Harper's a good guy and a friend of Lowell Green's, but, you know, there comes a point in time where if you were going to lead a nation, then you better stand up and go to the front of the line and lead the nation.
And Carrie, if I may, that's what I was trying to get to, that because I don't agree with Stephen Harper's position or Jason Kenney's position as they, you know, steer away from this issue, because it's not politically expedient or it's political suicide to do so. In fact, that's why I left the Conservative Party myself and am now running as a candidate for the Christian Heritage Party.
Right.
And as you may know, CHP Canada has just recently released the new immigration policy, because This is an issue that calls for bold leadership. And Lowell Green alluded to it, and it is somewhat frustrating when people say it's got to come from the grassroots. It's got to come from the people. But I think that Canadians should demand of their leaders to actually lead on important issues like this. And when we hear that, you know, last year there was over 280,000, and as you guys talked about, all the extra hundreds of thousands of people that came into Canada to draw on all our programs and all the social programs that we have, we can see that this is not just a matter of the economy. It hurts the economy that way, but it's also a matter of our culture. And that's what I appreciate of Mr. Green, how he has such a good understanding of what our culture is. It's a Judeo-Christian culture. That's what makes Canada the envy of the world for so many people in this world. And we need to work hard to maintain that culture so that it doesn't get taken away and supplanted by something from the Middle East.
Thank you very much, Mike Schutten. And I'm so glad you called in. We've obviously touched a nerve with this issue, and it's raised an important one, and thank you for that. We will revisit the issue of immigration and multiculturalism in future shows, for sure.
It's a nervy issue, is it, Terry?
Yes, a nervy issue.